Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Our guest today, Elena LaPetra. Elena, it's really great to have you on. I appreciate you being here. And can you tell us, first of all, where you're calling in from and what you do for a living with Stronger Wellness?
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm Elena. I'm based in the UK, Windsor, actually, to be precise. And I am one of the co-founders of Stronger Wellness. And I like to call myself Chief Energy Officer just because of the fun of it. And yeah, so I mainly do all of the product side of things, the marketing side of things. Those are like my core areas. But then obviously I get involved in all of the strategic sales and everything else as well with my co-founder and the rest of the team.
Amazing. And what, I guess, tell me a little bit more about your background. What got you interested and wanted to be in this space? And what was the kind of problem you noticed out there in the market with these types of, you know, fitness products that you were trying to do a little bit differently or better with this brand?
So we were, I've been in the industry, actually, funny enough, as an exerciser myself since I was very little. I mean, I'm going to show my age now, but this is dating back to me and my mum, kind of like trying to do Jane Fonda cassette discs on TV back in the days, right? So that's kind of like where my passion for fitness and movement and sports and everything that was activities and gyms, obviously, as a default came from. I then went on to industrial engineering and products. And then from there, it was kind of like I started to just go towards, obviously, that passion for movement. So when, as you normally do with your careers, or some people might, is you start having all of these corporate jobs that, you know, in my case, I was very blessed. I had really cool companies with amazing brands, really established products. So I went all the way from Amer Sports Corporation, who had like Precor. And I mean, for you guys over there is probably more like Arc'teryx and Salomon and Sundo and Atomic and Wilson, right, all the way through Stairmaster and Schwinn. And then I helped launch in the UK Stage Cycling back in the days. Then obviously, as you start progressing in your career, what happens is you start finding love. Of course, most of these companies are pyramid shape. And then the more you start being really good, the harder it gets to progress. And I'm not saying necessarily from a financial perspective, but also it's kind of like from a knowledge perspective. So then you just start finding yourself like, well, hang on a minute. We're kind of like, I'm not learning as much anymore. I'm not progressing as much anymore. And to me, that is kind of like the death of you as an individual. Like if you're finding yourself in a place where you're not learning anymore, you got to run away fast. Yeah. So then I've always had an entrepreneur, you know, my family, they're mostly entrepreneurs. I started selling stuff at school when I was, I don't know, 11 or 12. I had like little sweets in my bag from my dad's and mum's shop and all of that stuff. And I continued to sell stuff. So I always knew I wanted to do my own business. I just frankly didn't know exactly what, but I also knew it needed to be in the movement and fitness and gyms and sports space, because that's where my passion, that's where I light up. That's where I kind of like come alive. So you start kind of like going, okay, but you know, where are the gaps and stuff? And actually, I think sometimes people, yes, there are certain entrepreneurs out there that have that eureka moment that I have sometimes outside of this industry, whereby I go, how come nobody has thought about that? That's definitely a need. Somebody should start a company on that. But then I also think that there is other things, like it happens to us, whereby we started in a path which was, okay, we're going to open a studio with the best of what we think is needed right now. And by that, I mean a gym. To it transforming itself, because finding a property at that time was so difficult and it took so long that because of our backgrounds in the fitness industry, we started to get all of the suppliers that we thought were best in class and were really cool. They were going, yeah, okay, we help you with your gym, but how about you help me launch my brand in the UK? Or how about you become our partner and all of this. So then all of a sudden we had this divergence, if you like, of the consumer side of things, but then also the commercial side of things, which was actually our original corporate backgrounds. And by we, I mean me and my other half. Ooh, yes, we do work and are, so we are partners for business and partners for life as well, which is an, probably we need another podcast on that. But yes, we that was our main background, and that's where our connections were from and our network was from. So then we kind of just said, you know what? Yes, you know, some of these really cool brands should have a better space, and maybe we can create something slightly different. And so even though it's a really, really crowded space, sometimes you kind of just think you can still create something really cool, and kind of like just the same spaces can be created, but in a little bit more of a creative eye, or trying to challenge a little bit like the standards out there, and kind of going, yeah, that's great, but have you thought about doing it this way and all that stuff? And that's kind of like what we are. We're like a British company that have the aim to kill boring gym spaces.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I appreciate sharing that. But I was taking a look at the website, obviously, before we hopped on. It's a lot of really unique SKUs on there. It's very, very cool. So I guess I meant to ask you, when did you actually launch it? When did you actually like make your first sale with like the real launch of this brand and these products?
Yeah, hilarious. What was our first one? I think actually, funny enough, back in the days, we found this Australian guy. He's lovely. His name was Aaron, and he's a personal trainer. You could actually have a podcast separately with him as an entrepreneur. He's brilliant. And he had developed these, I wish I had one next to me, Y-Bell, which basically was this triangular shape accessory that was kettlebell, dumbbell, med ball, and push-up stand all in one. And we found him through a connection and a network. We found it on the floor at the trade show, really totally like uncompromising, and, you know, kind of like you wouldn't think much of it. But I fell in love with it straight away. And we brought it to the UK. We were there, one of their first partners. We then became to be the largest distributor globally. And that was one of our first sales on a B2B level. Now in consumer, which basically we fell into mainly because of COVID. And that's something really cool to talk about as well, because I imagine loads of entrepreneurs have gone through horrendous stuff through it, and good stuff as well.
A lot of good, actually. I find a lot of opportunistic perspectives through COVID, actually. Yeah.
Correct. It's a bit like, here we go. And then, oh, it worked. which is really cool. But then on that level, it started by that. And then we started obviously creating our own products and stuff, which was really cool.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And I guess, yeah, to talk me a little bit through like the pivot you did have to make through that time. I mean, you know, obviously the changes, even if you were already selling online or direct to consumer, I mean, there's still a lot of changes people had to make. So yeah, I guess, talk me kind of through those times and sure. You know, what kind of pivots you had to make, and which one of those things that you had to change during that time, like kind of stuck around till today, and which things have kind of like rebounded? Those are always interesting things I find as well.
So yeah, it's really interesting, because it's like in your world a little bit with, you know, what you guys do on marketing. We basically, all of our customers went home, like all of the gyms shut down. So all of a sudden we're like, you know, hands on head, full deep down going, oh my God. And then everybody's going, well, you need to really quickly do your runway, how much you have left, and, you know, how long can you survive, and how long is this going to be? And then you kind of go, well, how long is a piece of string? You know, nobody knew, as you remember, nobody knew. And then I started researching about the Spanish flu back at the days. And then I just thought, well, if it's going to be anything like this, we're going to be here for a long ride, right? So then I remember sat there one night with my partner, and we were kind of going with Steve, and we were going through all of these motions. And by the way, this is like super emotional. I'm Latin, as you can tell. So I'm like in full emotion on this, all of that. And then I go, no, stop. We're going to stop this right now. We're not going to have a long death. Like, this is a long, painful cancer whereby, you know, you have X amount of months left and you're going to draw back as much as you can to just survive. I'm not doing that. If we're going to do this, because by then we started to get random phone calls. We weren't online at that time fully. Our website was what you guys probably in your world would describe as more of an informational website.
Right.
But it wasn't a merchant website. We weren't a B2C fully. You could buy something from us, but we didn't have a fully compliant warehouse for it or anything like that. And we started to get these random phone calls of, I'll never forget this lady. She was in tears and she was like, please help me, get me a mat, get me, you know, get me something. I need to exercise. I'm going to go mad. I want to please help me. And I'm like, listen, we don't even have a UPS account, right? Or whatever, but of course I'll help you. And this is kind of like how I kind of went, you know what? No, we're not going to have a long death. We're going to put everything we have on going online, get some stock that is appropriate for that right now, and we're going to put it all there. So within about 2 weeks, we were fully online, immersing ourselves in your world of Google Ads with shopping and merchant centers and, you know, warehouses with fully like Shopify, you know, all of that stuff. And I have to say, it was frightening. I mean, that night I almost didn't sleep, you know, thinking, oh my God, oh my God. But we were very, very, very blessed that it gave us a home run in the end, and it helped us, you know, have a very comfortable COVID. And on top of that, we got to help thousands of people, which was really, really rewarding, right? We still have photos of all of the people, you know, exercising and stuff and keeping well. What did we keep from that? A lot of, obviously, I learned so much in those months, especially those crucial 2 weeks, that our website tremendously changed on the back of that. And obviously, that has obviously kept a lot of benefits for today, even though now we're not as consumers at that time, because obviously those were incredible times. I mean, we were having,
right,
you know, thousands and thousands of visits a day, like tens of thousands one day. I mean, it was insane. But we kind of like just kept loads of really good infrastructure behind that, plus obviously the learnings and really good contacts on that. So I really cherish those times.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And I think one of the most important things, it seems like, in all the conversations I have with anybody selling direct to consumer anything, is just kind of having like a more omni-channel approach going forward after COVID now, because I think a lot of people got really burned, especially we have a lot of people that come on the CPG space, like food and drink, and a lot of people that formed their businesses 2016 to 2018, a couple of years before COVID, got so big into wholesale and realized that that can all be completely taken away from you overnight if anything like this ever happens again. So I think moving forward, one of the best pieces of advice I get from other entrepreneurs that I have on the podcast is just like maintain relationships to be able to sell what you're selling, you know, through many, many channels, not just wholesale, not just direct to consumer, not just Amazon, not just fair, not just marketplaces. I think that's great. And I found a lot of people that were able to make pivots and keep their business going through COVID kind of ended up in this really unique and like advantageous situation, kind of like where you find yourself now, where you have these connections and these direct relationships with a lot of customers to be able to sell direct while also going back and nurturing, you know, your old channels like you used to do pre-COVID, right? So I think that's amazing.
You have things as well really cool, like, you know, one of those bigger learnings at that time, as you just said, was don't allow to have your entire business on someone else's platform,
right?
You know, or on someone else's basket, because mm-hmm. if God forbid something happens there, you're done. Like, you know what I mean? So we do have, obviously, when you have your own channels, you have your own databases. Okay, yes, great to have something else, but I have my own database. I have, so then you have all of these different little baskets just in case, right? Which is invaluable. And yeah, that did come from COVID as well. Rightly so, as you say.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And obviously selling direct to consumer has its own just unique advantages insofar as, you know, you have those people's contact information, that direct interaction, direct feedback, which you can't always get from, you know, indirect channels if you're selling like wholesale or something. So, no, that's amazing. I appreciate you sharing that. And you know, obviously a lot of people went through very similar experiences and some people still kind of feeling the aftermath of that, you know, in certain parts of even in the US, I mean, still kind of like coming out of COVID in many ways. I mean, some things that changed forever. So yeah. I think, you know, being able to share people's experiences and the pivots they made and the changes and how they took advantage of, you know, some of the things that changed during that time. I think some people are still dealing with that. So I appreciate you sharing that perspective. And I know I mentioned before we got on this question, I always love to ask everybody that comes on the podcast, which is, you know, if you could go back when you were still pre-revenue and this was even still an idea, if you could give yourself any one piece of advice, if you were to start this business again, what do you think that piece of advice would be?
It's funny because I've actually, funny enough, I don't think I've ever actually thought of that question, not because of an arrogant way of, oh, I'll never change anything in my life, blah, 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 right? But I think because I suppose I live my life but under the motto of nothing is forever. So you can't like just go next, 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 next. Yes, learn from it, but you know, it is inevitable, right? I suppose the only thing that I look back and it came naturally to my head was stop trying to make perfect. Yeah. Just get it out, you know. And this concept of minimum viable product is something that I still struggle with, but is mainly attached to your own standards of what it should look like in your head versus what's good enough. Like, you know, without letting people down, obviously, or yourself, you know, but just get it out. And I do think the first year of inception, a lot of time was spent on things that when I look back in hindsight, we should have just get it out a lot faster and then tweak along the way. That's probably one of the biggest lessons to me is getting the concept of minimum viable product, not only in your head, but apply it every day, right? It's kind of like going, right, hang on, stop it now. Is this good enough to get out? We can always tweak. So yeah, that would be the one.
I think that's really good advice. And you're probably not surprised to hear, it's actually a pretty common answer I get to that question. It's like that old, you know, adage of like, you know, if you're not embarrassed by the first thing you brought to market, you did it too late. You know, that's a typical, like,
absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly. So I think it's good advice. Yeah.
But then you're also comparing yourself or comparing certain capacities to when you were part of a, you know, several billion dollar corporation that had, mm-hmm. you know, millions of people under marketing itself, not millions, but you know what I mean? So you kind of go, stop it, right? You know, you gotta always kind of just go, no, it's good enough. Just get it out, you know?
No, I think it's really good advice. And from a lot of, you know, people I've had on the podcast who still are pre-revenue or they're very, very early in their journey. It's one of the things they tell me that they grapple with, which is like, you know, like, I don't know when it's good enough. Like, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs, like, we're all kind of perfectionists, right? I think that can be a struggle for a lot of us where, you know, and I feel like that and, you know, coupled with the fact that, you know, once you kind of get things going and you're thinking about, you know, new products and new SKUs and when to roll them out, you can get so involved with the day-to-day operative side of the business that you don't always have the time to, you know, just think about those things deeply.
Absolutely.
So like you become even more, you know, disconnected from like what like the threshold for minimum viable product is when you're so involved with so many other, you know, parts of the business as you grow and you have financials to deal with and, you know, IP and legal things to deal with on a daily basis. So I know. I think it's really good advice, I think.
So when I had this chat with some CEOs, friend of ours, entrepreneurs and stuff like that the other day, and it was about when is the line getting too blurry between the identity of your brand and your own, right? Mm-hmm. And then you need to detach yourself. Like, when is time to let the baby go? When is time to, the brand is no longer your child, is no longer your personality, is no longer an image of yourself, is a brand. And once you try to make that disconnect, then it's a lot easier to make these decisions because you're no longer thinking, oh my goodness, but what is the industry going to think about me? Mm-hmm. Is this going to be a failure? So is that a reflection of myself and all that stuff? And then you kind of just need to go, well, tough. Everybody starts somewhere, you know, just detach yourself from it. And that's really liberating. It's really hard. At least I found it really hard because I found that inevitably you're going to be really attached to your brand. But yeah, I mean, imagine the ones that already sold their brands and then someone else has taken it and then made a mess of it. And then, oh my God, you want to die. It's like, ah, that was my child. But yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely another kind of common sentiment I hear when asking that question too is, you know, a lot of folks will tell me, you know, basically like, don't be afraid to take the help. Don't be afraid to outsource for things where you're not an expert, even though like it is yours and you want to make all the decisions because it's your baby and you love it. And like, you know, nobody knows how to do it like you do. But I think it's really important. And other advice I've heard to that point is basically just like, you know, take the time to make sure you understand those sides of the business so that you know what a good job in doing that looks like when you do outsource. But don't feel like you have to do it all yourself 100% of the time. But like, just dip your feet into everything so you can hire well and get good help to know what good help would look like because you've done it yourself. But don't wait too long to do that before it becomes too much. I think it's to your point, is another really common and I think really well taken piece of advice as well.
Well, and when like what you guys do is a really important thing. Unless you have a really strong background on that, if I am teaching you guys how to do this job, I'm not doing my job and you're not doing your job,
right?
So then, you know what I mean, like unless my background was exclusively that, I should not be the one, you know, knowing it all sort of thing. Because it doesn't matter how many online courses you do. You guys should outsmart me in certain things, right?
Yep. No, exactly. And I think having diligence in those relationships is really important as well. Because it's funny, I hear like two sides of that coin when asking that question, which is like, you know, don't outsource too much too fast, but also like, don't try to take on everything in the first two whole years of your business. So obviously, you know, this, I think the real lesson from asking that question over like almost 100 podcasts I've done now is, you know, you just, there's nuance at every turn when you're an entrepreneur. And like, you have to, there's no silver bullet, there's no correct answer. Like, you just have to be willing to think about things in a new light every day when they come up, and be willing to pivot and willing to make changes and willing to outsource more of your business than you wanted to when it becomes too much, willing to take on more when you realize that you kind of are stretched too thin and are paying too much to too many people and you're losing control. I think the real lesson is just that there's nuance everywhere, and you just have to be willing to like roll with the punches with those things. And yeah, I really appreciate you obviously, you know, adding
really
to that conversation.
It's a really fine line between, you know, everybody says at the moment, you see on LinkedIn everywhere, kind of like going, oh, you gotta, you know, stop being afraid, or, you know, don't have fear, and entrepreneurs are fearless, and all of these things. I have to say, absolutely not true. That night of COVID, when we decided to put everything in there, I cried my eyes out. I was full on in panic, right? But decisions have to be made. You know, so is that line between like having the fear to make decisions? Some obviously are, you know, small decisions, some others are really big and whatever else, but just making that line between, okay, I know I have fear, but I'm going to make it, and I'm going to be okay with making mistakes because it's part of the journey. And it sounds really cliche, but actually when you really think about it, when you look back and look at all of the different mistakes you made, actually it's part of like the tweaking to get to where you really are. And then you look back and you go, well, actually we probably wouldn't be on this spot here on this product or whatever if we hadn't made that mistake and that mistake, because that taught us that we needed to do this and this and this. But it again, as well, when you attach it to pride, it's hard because people kind of go, no, I got it perfect the first time around. It's like, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And it's one of those like old marketing adages as well, which like, you know, I think a lot of people start businesses, and it may even be true that like the thing that you have created can help every single person that's alive in the world today. It's like that may be true. But in order to do that, you have to start somewhere. So like, it's just that old like adage of, you know, if you try to message to everybody or market to everybody, you really resonate with nobody, basically. And you put yourself in competition with like, you know, some of the biggest like, you know, generational conglomerates in the world trying to do general messaging that touches everybody. You're never going to have the resources to be able to do that. So no,
oh, when the kids, you know, when on Instagram, everybody's glorifying entrepreneurs and being an entrepreneur and all of that stuff. And then kids have this, you know, idea that is this perfection bubble and all of this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, you kind of go, look, you gotta suck it up a lot, you know, and not everything is going to be a unicorn, and you got to be okay with that. You know, people always have this kind of like, oh my goodness, you know, I'm going to start a company because I want to be, you know, this unicorn thing in 2 years time and all of that stuff. And yeah, it's not like that. It really isn't. And cool if it is, right? For those that have made it that way, awesome. But it might not be everyone's cup of tea, right? I mean, those that have made it to unicorns, some of them have actually regretted it because it totally corroded their lifestyle and families and everything else, right? So even that road is not a pretty road sometimes, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's that. And then there's people who talk about like they had an overnight success when really it took them 5 years. And then they're talking about overnight success just to send you to the link to their online course in their bio.
Know.
So it's like, you know, I don't really know.
It's
Maybe
like
we
overnight.
Don't aspire to be that. Like, I'm not sure.
I know. That's the other funny one. It's like overnight success. And they've been crunching this in the garage for like 5 years. It's like,
yeah, right.
Overnight success.
Yeah.
That's very funny. But hey, look. Everybody has a different journey. So,
we're not here to judge. We're just here to bring perspective to others in the world, to let them know that, you know, especially with things when you're selling direct to consumer, CPG kind of brands, it's a slow process. And if you grow too fast, it can really be, like you said, corrupting. I mean, you know, your fulfillment is going to suffer, or your product is going to suffer. You know, if you grow from doing a, you know, 10,000 a month to 200,000 a month, like if you have the capacity to do that leading up to that, and you're only doing 10,000 a month, you'd probably be under by now, because you're hemorrhaging too much. And to be able to scale to that in a month's time is almost impossible. So I think having that, you know, just like balanced perspective of growth is really important too, to understand that, like, even if you could sell $1 million tomorrow, could you fulfill that? Of course not. So like, but like, and take that as the extreme, but in like, in real, like in reality, like, you know, even scaling to 10 to 20,000 a month can be really hard and difficult, you know, to double your fulfillment and things like that.
So, you know, it's funny because that happened to us in COVID, on one of the times when they closed the gates again, mm-hmm. and the website just went through the roof. And I mean through the roof. This was insane stats, right? And on day two, it was like ping, 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 ping. And I was looking at this and everybody's like, you know, friends and family and stuff going, oh my goodness, good for you guys and all of this and stuff like that. And I'm sat there thinking to myself, okay, we need a meeting now with the warehouse and operations and everyone, because I need to see whether we're actually going to be able to come back to everyone on time and not let people down, right?
Right.
And actually, we had to stop Google Ads through those times, because I just went, stop Google Ads, stop all of that. We're going to let people down, and we got to do this scalable. Like, even if at that point in time it meant a week versus, you know, probably now these days you have a bit more time, but on those times were insane. And someone told me, talking about those times later, you know, I love talking to entrepreneurs that are older than me because they have so much experience. One of them is my mom. And they kind of like have a really, really good perspective on growth. And then they kind of like go, one of them have told me something really good, which is like, growth is, you got to define what growth and success means to you guys, right? Not what Instagram says, not like Forbes, not, you know, The Economist or any of that stuff, because you got to grow on your terms. And that's something that we apply a lot today. And we've seen a lot of entrepreneurs, friend of ours, that have actually gone the route of accepting investors' money and is gone really sour. Because then the expectations on growth are very different to, you know, what the values of the company used to be, or, you know, all of these different things. So one of the learnings that I've had from my colleagues, you know, is just always make sure that growth is under your terms. And that is whether you want a lifestyle business or whether you want a boom and go home sort of thing, right? It's really important. On some people say, well, what's your exit strategy and all of these different things, and don't have to have an answer to that immediately. It can also be something that you really enjoy doing, you know.
No, it's such good advice. And yeah, I think growing on your own terms is, I think, a really beautifully succinct way to put that, which, like, I try to convey, because it's something else that I get, you know, from folks in longer form, but I think put very succinctly here in the way you just said it. So I appreciate that. And yeah, Elena, I just want to give you a quick opportunity as well, just to, you know, plug your website, your social media pages for anybody listening might be maybe interested in potentially partnering with you with your business, or, you know, checking out the website, or maybe placing an order. What's the best way for everyone to stay in touch with you all?
So you can go to strongerwellness.com and reach us through there, or you can always obviously find us at all the different social media platforms. We live on LinkedIn mostly it's literally at Stronger Studios or Stronger Wellness on LinkedIn, or just send us a message to hello@strongerwellness.com. And if you have a gym or any sort of movement space that you want to do in the UK and Europe, just drop us a line.
Awesome. Well, Elena, I just want to say thank you again for coming on. I wish you the best of luck and continued success in everything you're doing. I love what you're doing and your passion for it. And yeah, I really look forward to staying in touch as well. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Elena. Thanks, everybody.